Cliff Central.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
It's an epic day. It's an epic day. It's going to be an epic show. It's just Ramon and I. But trust me, I think you'll get fair entertainment out of this episode.
It's not a whatever you call it. I think it's a glorious day. It's one of the best days in many a year for a number of reasons. Firstly, local and international.
Okay. So just to tell you, you're going to be hearing this next week, Tuesday. I don't know. What's that? The 27th, somewhere around there. 28th, whatever it is. We're recording on Brexit Day.
It's Friday,
and if you believe the left, the UK is currently sinking into the ocean. People are drowning, of course, immigrants first, because, you know, that's what the right would do to the immigrants, just drown them, you know, as the whole island sinks like the Titanic.
Well, if you want to use a Game of Thrones reference, Great Britain is Winterfell after Ned Stark gets his head chopped off.
so many metaphors we could use.
Right, let's start off with the rant. All these lefties, all these people who love voting and love democracy and they just love people expressing their desire to do something, hate the fact that people voted leave, and now they are furious that people disagree with them, and now all they're doing is saying that I can't believe the Brits are such racists and such bigots and whoever fucking whatever other swear word or insult
they want to use. Democracy sucks when it doesn't go your way.
Yeah, absolutely. It is remarkable in a day and age of technology that a journalist of a certain
Deborah Petter, for goodness sake.
Deborah Petter, what does she tweet? She said, I can't believe what Britain voted for, xenophobia and bigotry.
Well, she deleted it since, but, you know, for posterity's sake, of course, I saved it. Brexit is an incredibly sad victory for racists and bigots and much that is vile in the world.
Right, so let's see what she says is vile. Self-determination as a nation is vile. Control of borders is vile. Control of economic policy is vile. What else?
Standing up against regulation, unnecessary regulation about how you fish when you're allowed to do things like that is vile.
That's absolutely vile. And Deborah, I'll have you know that a lot of the people who voted leave in the UK were the immigrants themselves, Wally, because you know why? Because now Britain is going to close its borders or have very controlled immigration, so there's less competition amongst immigrants for jobs. So are they racist and bigots too, Deborah?
Well, and on top of that, a lot of the people who are part of Labour, the poor working class, are actually responsible for the swing, because the assumption was that the north of England, the working class, the sort of former coal miners that got walked over by Thatcher, and don't get me wrong, I love Thatcher, but these are the guys who we expected to vote for Remain. They looked at it and said, no, this is bullshit. We're leaving.
Who voted Remain in Britain? Look, it's all around London, so it's big business, it's big finance, it's big corporations. They voted Remain. Who else voted? Scotland, like some funny island in the north no one gives a shit about. Wales voted out.
Well, if you've ever been to London, you know that being able to live in London means that you are amongst the richest people in the world, even as a middle-class person who can live in London. So frankly, basically we've got the left backing the rich.
Absolutely. You have the left backing a huge super state filled with communists who hate democracy, who weren't elected to be in the European Commission in any way, and now somehow if you're against that, you're a racist and a bigot. I mean, what fucking planet are these people on? It blows my mind.
It gets better. I see Dorothy Black on Twitter also said, why do stupid people get a vote? Why? And then with a gif, you know, of someone crying. okay, Dorothy, please do me a favor. Next time the elections don't go your way in South Africa, please say the same thing. And we'll see you in the same place as Penny Sparrow, I'm sure.
Please say the same thing when the ANC wins again. I would love to hear you vote. But, I mean, because it's white people, or you assume it's white people voting leave, it's very politically correct. And it's the last politically correct prejudice. Let me just regain my voice here. It's the last politically correct prejudice when people think it's white people doing something and they can collectivize all of them. Britain is a very multicultural society, just by the way. There's over 1 million Muslims. There's hundreds of thousands of Eastern Europeans. There's millions of Russians. It's not white dominated anymore. Maybe you're thinking about Canada, where all the Remain people are going to emigrate to.
Yeah, they all want to go. I saw Greats. Did you say that you want to go? The guy wants to go to Canada. You say to him, why not Mexico or where?
It's multicultural, multi-diverse Pakistan. Why are you going to Canada?
And then of course I've got something come into my timeline about anyone that feels like they have no true home. I feel that too. I mean, honestly, serious, grow the fuck up.
It's a remarkable day because the very way that the left runs the discourse, it's put right back into their face today. They all for democracy. They all want self-determination. They all want, who knows what, you know, protectionism.
Transgender bathrooms.
Yeah, and then the UK turns around and says, oh, you know what, fuck you guys. We want a bit of autonomy for ourselves. No, you can't because you're racist. What?
So let's talk about some of the scaremongering. I know we last podcast we said this, we had the conversation with Gareth Van Onselen, and we were saying, you know, he's kind of brought up some of the points that the Remain campaign had made. Let's be honest that up until pretty much last night when the results started coming in, I was actually up. It was about 4 a.m. this morning. It was assumed that Remain would win. And actually a lot of the Leave people, including Nigel Farage, had actually already conceded defeat, gone, oh, well, and you know how they'd conceded defeat? They hadn't gone, oh, I feel like I don't have a home anymore. And they hadn't gone, oh, I have to go live in Canada. And they hadn't said, this is the worst day in the history of Britain. No, they'd gone, look, we fought a good fight. It didn't work out. We still disagree, obviously, but we will carry on and we will continue campaigning and we will try and do our best to move forward. That was their kind of position. I give it that it didn't last very long in terms of a concession and it wasn't a true concession. So maybe they would have been hysterical, but the hysterics are unbelievable. So the Remain campaign says the economy is going to tank. So of course we see everyone's favorite picture from the Leave side at the moment is that picture of the guy from Sky. Standing in front of his big screen. It's like a 300-inch plasma screen. And basically they've taken the entire pound exchange rate for only the last sort of 6 hours. Okay. If anyone here understands, and I'm sure our listeners are intelligent people, so you understand how a graph works, especially one that's basically been going for several decades. Taking a couple of hours on that graph means bugger all. But they take a couple of hours, and of course they show the steady line with a few little dips and troughs, and then it's just a straight down. It's like a cliff. And of course they go, look, the currency has tanked. You know? I mean, really?
Yeah, no, but then there's a narrative. It's the worst the pound has been since 1985. And then you actually look at the graph going back 2 years, and it's actually doing better now than it was in February of 2016.
Yeah, you idiots. Go back and look at the financial crisis in 2008. It was worse then, too. I mean, you know, the hysteria is unbelievable. And also, the fact that these people clearly understand nothing about economics and nothing about finance, nothing about the markets, this is profit-taking. So if you're a trader, you know that the market is going to react negatively to this because you've been told. I mean, George Soros says the market's going to react badly, which means he's going to sell. So chances are when big people who hold a lot are going to sell, the market will tank a little bit. So what you do is you sell, you wait to buy low, and you sell again when it goes back up. I mean, this is simple, simple, basic stuff. The pound will be back to where it was in pretty short time. And bear in mind, short time is not 6 hours in currency sense, guys. 6 hours is, we're talking about 6 months, a year, 2 years, and that really in the context of things is meaningless.
That will be back to its levels in a few weeks. I mean, come on. But let's talk about why we vote, well, we don't vote leave, but why are we on the leave side?
I wish.
So the reason we are is that, I'm an anarchist and Jonathan's a classic liberal, apparently.
Mild libertarian occasionally.
So, I mean, if you actually understand what the EU is, it's basically like a huge super state. So you cede a bit of power to it in terms of the justice system in some respects. I mean, they got the Court of Human Rights. So, for example, a lot of people in Britain who were terrorists and were found guilty of being terrorists in the UK went to the EU Court of Human Rights, and then they were overturned, you know, or the sentence was reduced, or the sentence was, no, you can't send him back to Jordan because he might face the death penalty.
Someone corrected us on Twitter. Joe Cox was who was the MP who was murdered by the right wing nut job. She was, her death was mourned by Hamas, and we pointed out, you know, that awkward time when a terrorist organization mourns your death. And of course, someone had to remind us that the EU doesn't consider Hamas a terrorist organization.
Right. I mean, so that's
so these are the kind of problems you have.
So that's one reason. Another reason is that the people in the commission are unelected by the people of Europe. So they're elected within the small confines of the EU itself. And they're unelected. And basically all they do is pass regulations about washing machines and pillowcases and fucking who knows what else.
Everything from farming to production to shipping. And regulation is generally not a good thing. It stunts growth. In fact, the growth of the EU is poor. It's basically flat.
Well, the growth has been flat for – it's actually decreased in the past 10 years. It's the only trading bloc in the world that has decreased. Asia, Africa, North America, and South America has grown dramatically in 10 years. The EU hasn't. So that's another reason why we voted leave. Another reason why we voted leave is that it cost about, I think it was £50 billion a year that the UK had to give to the EU.
It's a big figure. It's money you could put elsewhere.
I mean, it's 1% of GDP. Like, it's not a massive figure. But even so, it doesn't really matter. But more importantly, what was Britain getting out of the EU? And no one can actually answer that. Because, yes, 46% of the trade from Britain was with the EU, but that's still – the rest was not with the EU,
54%,
right?
Therefore, wasn't.
Right. And if you look at people who are not within the EU, I think – who was in Norway and Switzerland?
Yeah, and actually I heard an incorrect statement made this morning. Justice Malala actually said, you know, oh, well, Switzerland will probably leave the EU now.
Oh, we heard that.
Well, sorry, Justice.
Yeah, they never were part of the EU. The problem with the EU, like, it was created after World War II. And for that time, it made sense. It was a trading bloc. They removed trade barriers between 25 states. Well, now it's 25 states in Europe. And they have, like, trade agreements with each other, and people are free to travel.
Travel and things like that.
It made a lot of sense in 1950. But now, if, you know, as I kept saying, if you want to trade with someone in China, you just do it. You don't need a trade agreement. And the EU doesn't have a trade agreement with China or America.
And they do tons of trade with them.
And they did tons of trade with them in any way. Switzerland does not have trade agreements with many people or many countries. And they are the greatest trading nation in Europe now. Right? So, I mean,
yeah, the evidence seems to be against this whole you have to be part of the EU to be successful.
And this narrative about racist and, you know, racism, bigotry, self-determination is not racist or bigoted. To assume that the only reason why people voted leave was that immigrants don't come in
So let me confront that, because I think what a lot of people react to in that sense is that obviously there were many parties on the side of leave and the side of remain. So you had, for example, conservatives within the conservative, the Tory party, people like Boris Johnson, who are saying, let's leave, very strongly. And you have David Cameron as the prime minister, really, because he had no choice, saying, let's stay. But then you have, you know, Labour saying, no, we must also stay. And then you have UKIP, which is basically essentially a far right party in the UK. You can argue about it, but they're right, put it that way. So what happens is all the different players who want to leave say things, and the guys who want to remain for that matter say things in different ways. So UKIP, who have always been quite heavy-handed in terms of their marketing, will have their leader, who is Nigel Farage, who's gotten a lot of sort of negative press. Perhaps he deserves it. Have him standing in front of a poster of thousands of immigrants, with a tagline to the effect of breaking point. And obviously people see that and they lose their minds because it's xenophobic, et cetera, et cetera. The problem I have is that if Nigel Farage says vote leave, and if someone else who's more moderate says vote leave, and even if someone on the left says vote leave, which there were people who were part of that.
A lot of Labour voters voted leave.
Yeah. So the problem is people need to stop equating that if you, for example, voted leave, then you obviously agree with Nigel Farage, the way Nigel Farage presents the argument, and everything Nigel Farage then stands for. You really need to understand that people can have different views and different approaches and different ways of seeing things, the same thing. You can have two opinions on the same freaking thing.
They still want the same outcome.
Yeah.
Right.
So Nigel Farage says, oh yeah, no, we're going to have lots of refugees, and they're going to come and basically, you know, they're going to take over. And I mean, there was one ridiculous hashtag on Twitter, something like Britannistan or something. You know, it's going to become essentially, you know, fear of the brown people type of bullshit. So that's coming from them, and fine, you're perfectly fine to go, I think that's a load of crap. But at the same time, another person might go, I think that long term, this will be better for trade, or this will be better for our own sovereignty. I mean, a lot of people voted on the sovereignty argument. They couldn't really care necessarily about the scaremongering about refugees that are going to be let in. And let me just say, it's not complete scaremongering, because the EU sets the sort of numbers.
The targets that
EU states have to let through their borders. So I want you to try put yourself in someone who wants to leave for that reason's shoes. We are in South Africa, and basically, let's say now the AU expands from just being this useless bunch of morons up north who kind of occasionally send our troops into dangerous war zones. They turn around and go, right, we now get to tell you what to do. And every year you are going to accept 500,000 migrants / refugees, whatever you want to call them, from the Congo. Okay? You have to accept them. And South Africa looks at it and goes, listen, guys, it's a rough time. Budgets are tight. We're battling ourselves. We can't afford to accept them. And it's not just accept them, by the way. It's house them, feed them, provide them with health, etc. You can't just put them in a camp, as we do at Lindela with you know refugees from Zimbabwe, so imagine if the AU gets up and tells us to do that, and we go, but we can't, and they go, it's not a choice. We're not asking you. We're telling you, and that is a fair reason for someone in Britain to turn around and go, I'm not doing this.
Right, and a lot of people are anti-immigration due to economic reasons. Right, the working class voted leave for a particular reason. Immigrants are competition to them. Immigrants are competition to the jobs that they have. So it makes perfectly economically sound sense to vote leave if you're working class. Only the politicians and the lefties and people in corporations, like, they're like, oh yeah, let's bring in immigrants, but they don't have to suffer the consequences of it. Now, as an anarchist, you know, borders shouldn't exist, you know, in my opinion. But immigration is going to, I'm pro-immigration, by the way, but you have to understand that you can't have whoever you want, when you want, how you want. It's a process. And funny enough, a lot of the leave people are not anti-immigration.
They just want it done in a proper way.
Well, they want control over it, and they want to have a due process to immigrants. They don't want just people rocking in.
It's a funny argument about the immigrant thing. So one of the things about, oh no, let the immigrants in is, you know, they have these really cool adverts where they'll have like a fireman You know, he's obviously doing good for his community, etc. And he goes, you know, I'm an immigrant. And they'll have a nurse and they'll, you know, that type of thing. And just to show you that, like, immigrants are not these sort of people who just come in and, I don't know, start smoking crack and shooting people. That is an illogical sort of view.
No, on the contrary, but immigrants actually do quite well.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is that that guy who's the fireman probably got in because he had those skills. Whereas everyone knows this. If you want to emigrate, and I'm sure some of you listening in this process, if you want to emigrate anywhere in the world, they want to know, why should we take you? And if you're not going to add value to them, well, they've got no reason to particularly take you. If you're arguing completely on humanitarian grounds, well, then each society, I agree, should probably provide some humanitarian relief relative to what they're able to do. And I think that's where the big argument comes in, is that the EU doesn't care what you're able to do.
Arguably so. I mean, you know, as I said, immigrants actually are very good for a country. But you cannot have just unmitigated, excuse me, immigration like that. But anyway, I mean, what else should we vote leave? Oh, David Cameron resigned. Did you see that? Good. That pig fucking pan faced moron.
In fairness, he never
gone.
Fucked the pig. He just got some head. I mean,
same thing. I'm not talking about his wife either. But no, thank goodness he's gone, because he is an awful person. He is the quintessential Etonian debater who happens to get into power and has no idea what to do. He's awful in every single way. And hopefully Boris Johnson takes over. And then we have like a proper Donald Trump of England. Though, to be fair, Boris Johnson looks like Donald Trump, but he's actually a very, very intelligent chap. And I mean, he's been mayor of London twice.
He's not as stupid as Donald, who somehow managed to beat 16 other people to the nomination for president.
Right. So I think it's a great time to be English. I'm not English. I'm French, so I don't care too much about the English. But I do think it's important to note that the media and polling companies and big corporations and, you know, vested interests have all been wrong. The ordinary working class man on the street said, we're tired of this shit. We want out, and yeah, they won. I think that's a very important democratic principle, even though I'm not a Democrat.
One of our former guests, Chris Hart, tweeted, market reaction to Brexit is like the over-dependent battered wife who's just broken free and is now wandering about for food, clothing, and shelter. I think that's quite astute.
No, that's what it is. It's independence, it's sovereignty, and And that's a good thing. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. So that's our Brexit rant. I think, you know, today there's been some big South African news as well. We've got the appeal from our president, that moron.
About the spy tapes, he lost. I mean, what's new? Do we really need to go into it?
Yeah. Well, the question is now what happens, because basically, he has lived by the principle of keep things in the courts as long as possible, but like not actually me in court, rather the sort of procedural stuff in court as long as possible. And eventually it'll either go away or it'll be so long until I have to actually face it that, you know, just prolong it forever. So he assumptively has lost that ability. The NPA will have to
make a decision.
Yeah.
And they can't be seen to be biased, even though I think the appeal itself was biased, because the case on the very same set of facts was presented a few years back.
Yeah.
And the SCA did say, no, this is bullshit, you know, appeal denied. So, I mean, they went into it knowing they would lose, but obviously it's just a delay tactic until August. But anyway, I mean, Zuma's boring.
All right, fine.
As Gareth Van Osseren said, yeah, which is very astute of him, Zuma is not complicated. He says what he says and he means it. And it makes a lot of sense to me. So let's talk about Penny Sparrow. I want to talk about this, right?
All right.
So people obviously looked at us and said, hey, the funding model worked. Let's do it for Penny Sparrow. And fuck all was paid. Nothing.
Zero cents. Shut down the campaign.
0 cents. So what does this mean? Okay, let's take the narrative of the regressives. We live in a highly racist society, you know, white privilege, et cetera, et cetera. Not one person paid into Penny Sparrow's legal fees fundraiser. Not one. What does that say about your narrative?
Yeah, all those races, where were they suddenly?
Yeah,
did
what?
Did they not see it? Did they just ignore it? Did they not want to out themselves as racist, even though you claim that they are permanently racist all the time?
But I think it's an important question here. I mean, the ramifications are that people saw what Penny Sparrow did and said, yeah, it's a bit shit what she's did and she's racist. I'm not helping her. The narrative of the racist society, it's a bit broken, you know, after this, because no one supported her whatsoever. Not one person put a rant in.
I do think, though, an important conversation which we were having off air before we started is something about polls. So we have relied relatively heavily on polling data, which shows the sort of problem of racism not to be nearly as big as it's made out to be by the race baiters, and you know who those people are. And I just want to point out, and I've said it on Twitter, polling keeps getting it wrong. I did raise this with one of our other guests as well.
With Gareth.
I think it was with week. Gareth, and I think it might have even been with Leon Lowe as well. Is that polling seems to be getting it wrong a lot lately. I'm not sure if it's because it's being manipulated, if it's because it's often mainstream media polling and they want us to believe a certain thing.
No, but it could be the methodology of the poll itself.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
People read a question and are actually unsure what the question means, so they just check what makes it.
So there's lots of potential issues. So I think we just need to point something out, because they were wrong about the UK election that got Cameron into power. By a landslide effect,
the second one,
this one a year and a half, 2 years ago. So they were and they were far wrong about it. They said it was too close to call, and Labour got annihilated. They were wrong about Donald Trump. They said his campaign would last a month to 2 months. Then when he carried on going and Jeb Bush dropped out, they said no, but Ted Cruz will nail him, and Marco Rubio. And then neither of those oaks nailed him. And then they said, no, it's fine, because our polling data shows that 65% chance that Hillary wins. And that has now been narrowed to about a 60-40 on some of the polls, and even a 55-45 on others. So they got that wrong, and then they got the Brexit wrong. So I think it is important to note that, you know, polling...
Well, let's just qualify. So we use polling data because it's a metric. It's a data point. You can't.
It's something.
You can't have scientific data on racism. Well, not that I know of. I haven't seen any. I've looked for it, but I can't see any. I do find some on cognitive biases, which may be racist, etc. But you can't have peer-reviewed data on racism. So our data that we use, as we always said, though, polling data is not the gold standard. And the data we use from the Institute of Race Relations may be incorrect, but it has been replicated along other polls in the same
yeah,
so it has been replicated before. Mm. So what you're trying to say is that we still racism could be a problem. We don't think it's a very important problem. We never denied that it existed, and in terms of public policy, we don't see it as being more important than economics
or
political policy in general.
You have to rank things. You have to go, okay, there are many problems to deal with. What are the most important problems? And I still think, even without the data, in a logical sense, in terms of problems that affect people's lives greatly and make a significant difference, I'm not talking about their feelings. I'm talking about factually make a difference.
Socioeconomic outcomes.
Yeah. You know, I still don't, even without the polling data, and as we say, the polling data is at least a data point in a sort of area in which there is almost no data. All right, let's get on to, so we've spoken about Penny, let's leave Penny goodbye now. Good luck to her paying 150K. Chwane is burning. I mean, it was freaking hilarious because I posted some pictures of Los Angeles from the movie 2012, which is an apocalyptic film. And then I also posted a picture of downtown New York after the Avengers had their way with it. And I said, you know, this is what, you know, Chwane looks like this morning. Because, to be honest, when Aki Anastasio goes up in the helicopter and posts those pictures of fires, I don't know what they're trying to do with that. It is clearly trying to sort of push to an extent some sort of narrative of, oh my God, look how hectic this is. You know, they didn't have to go hire a helicopter at 30,000 rand an hour. But they did that because they know it's going to get them traction. People got very cross with me about that. But some people are so too stupid to even pick it up. They just like, we're like, oh my God, I can't believe that's happening. So we've got a situation in Shwane. It's still going on. I'm pretty sure by next Tuesday when you hear this, maybe it'll have calmed down a bit. But basically the ANC is fighting against themselves.
Yeah, so what you're seeing is ANC tribalism at its worst. So they nominated Toko Diza, I think that's her name.
Didiza, yeah.
Diza. Mm. So she's a Zulu woman from KwaZulu-Natal to be the next mayor, right? But now the current mayor, Ramaphosa, was not nominated. And he seems to have accepted it, though I'm not too sure about the sincerity of that.
He does seem to be quite a decent oak, actually. So
seems all right.
You don't trust politicians.
No, he bankrupted Pretoria, but he seems all right in any other respects.
But he gave them Wi-Fi. It doesn't matter if he bankrupted them.
He gave them Wi-Fi.
I mean, come on.
Easier to tweet.
Maslow's hierarchy of priorities. Wi-Fi comes long before, like, shelter and food.
So now there are allegations that there were 12 people, 12 members of the ANC, who went to the Royal Classic Hotel or whatever, with the intention of disrupting Pretoria as much as possible until Toko Didiza is removed as the nomination and Ramaphosa is put back.
Mm.
So this has nothing to do with service delivery or protests around that. This is all internal tribalism and everything to do with the 32 billion rand budget given to Pretoria every year, and where that goes to.
If you know the mayor, you're going to have a part of that pie. A slice of that pie is coming to you.
And don't get me wrong. A lot of people make a living and eat, and they make a living solely through, a tender program from the city or whatever. And that is fine. It's cronyism, but it's fine in my regard. However, these people, the same people, they stand to lose absolutely everything if a new mayor comes in. Because there will be new people,
new rules,
who are friends with her or whatever the case might be. So they will stand to lose their only source of income, I would assume.
Yeah,
just because they changed mayor. Yeah. And now these are the same people who are looting, and maybe not them themselves, but these are the ones causing the violence and the looting in Pretoria.
Mm. Well, mob mentality, once you get, once there are 100 people on the street, it's a lot easier to get 1,000 people on the street burning stuff.
I mean, when I first saw it, I thought someone had a racist Facebook post and everyone was, getting violent over that. But then I realized, no, it's not actually. But it is remarkable that very little has been said about the tribalism. And people, Power FM, EWN, a lot of people went on the streets.
Yeah.
And there's video clips.
Yeah.
A taxi driver says, I don't want the Zulu, excuse my language, I don't want the Zulu bitch as my mayor. She must go back to KZN. I want the Shangaan to be mayor. Another guy says, I don't want the Zulu bitch either. She must go back. I want the Shangaan. I want Ramaphosa. Now, this is deep-seated tribalism. And somehow that's okay.
Well, I mean, it's okay in the same week that Gwede Mantashe refers to Musi Maimane as a garden boy.
Well, it was Zizi Kodwa.
Apologies. I get confused between those two.
Yeah, so Mantashe is Secretary General.
Yeah, Zizi Kodwa is the Secretary.
Spokesman.
Oh,
that's another thing. Yes. Yeah, Musi Maimane, garden boy.
Yeah.
Lovely, yeah? So you got a person who's in the strongest party in the country, who's a spokesman for the party, and he calls his opposition a garden boy. Now, that's if it was anybody else, absolutely anybody else, this would be national news for weeks.
Yeah, well, I just remember back to Diane Kohler-Barnard, who reposted a questionable, put it that way. I don't know that there was anything racist. I don't remember the post specifically. It was something about if we went back to the times of Favut, we'd be better off.
P.W. Buerta,
Or whatever. But I don't know if that classifies as racist. If you want to take it as racist, fine. Bottom line is it was inappropriate. Certainly not something that you would like to see a member of parliament saying.
But what happened to
But what Well, I mean,
let's look at due process.
Yeah. So what happened to her? So I think firstly, she never actually wrote that. She reposted it, realized what it was, and deleted it within about 6 hours.
But more importantly, what happened to her?
Yeah. Well, so she was taken through disciplinary process, removed from. They actually, I'm not sure what ended up happening with that because she did win her appeal. But put it this way, even if she's still around, she's been put on the back benches, which in Parliament is like being in no man's land.
Well, she was demoted.
Yeah, and she was very high up. In fact, she sat on the policing committees and the state security and all that kind of stuff. So the double standards are just phenomenal. They really are quite phenomenal. But nothing will happen with that. Oh, guys, it's around lunchtime, so if you hear some chewing noises, it's just some chicken going down.
Yeah, first meal of the day. Deal with it. Right. So, just a small thing. There was an apartheid flag at Wits a couple of weeks back.
I saw that.
Fantastic.
For a film shoot, it wasn't like it was. No one was trying to incite anything. They were creating the RAND show from the 60s or the 70s. And as it happens, the RAND show actually used to be held on the Wits grounds.
That was the original venue of the RAND show.
And so they do a film and they put up this stuff as part of the production design.
Okay, I agree. Maybe there wasn't warning to say, listen, we're filming. There might be trigger warnings. There's an apartheid flag. And people were upset. And I understand that they were upset. But then Wits comes out and says, no, it's for a film shoot. And they're like, no, I don't care what it's for. It should never be allowed to be shown. I don't care what it's for. It should never. What? It's a film shoot. Like,
well, the SRC lost their minds. The SRC wanted disciplinary action. They wanted all kinds of stuff to go down.
But how are you supposed to show an apartheid era RAND show without the apartheid flag?
I don't have answers for this shit. I mean, it's just unbelievable that people think like this.
But how much of a victim are you that a piece of cloth with colors on it, like, you know, assassinates your mind and rationality? I mean, how pathetic are these people? Absolutely pathetic. I can't wait till they get to the corporate world. I can't wait.
Or just the real world as a whole. Going back to Leave, in fact, and Brexit, all the university towns voted overwhelmingly to stay in the EU, which I find, but like when I say overwhelmingly, I mean like in comparison to anywhere else, like it was 90-10 or 85-15, they voted to like stay. It just shows you how out of touch, in general, even with the people who want to stay, how out of touch, universities are. That was Oxford, Cambridge, those types of places.
Yeah. Well, the establishment, right?
Oh, and also, you know, the universities are heartlands of Marxist principles. So,
well, ironically, the only place to get a job as a Marxist is in academia. That's why it's infested with it.
It's a good terminology. Good terminology. All right, let's move on to we didn't get downgraded to junk. So I just wanted to make a point about that because I'm getting really irritated with us celebrating mediocrity. Like we don't get downgraded to junk and everyone goes, oh, it's great, it's fantastic, well done Pravin, well done, you did such a good job Pravin, excellent my man. For fuck's sake, people, like being just above junk is not something to be happy about. And maybe you think Pravin deserves it because, oh, well, you know, we could have been junk by now. And maybe we could have. But we used to be second from the top rating. We used to be one of the best places to put your money. We used to attract tons of foreign direct investment. And now we are like, we're not attracting because you're just above junk. People don't take the risk. Because when you are junk, then they have to either pull their money out or risk losing a lot of money. Talk about the EU when we do eventually become junk, because it's, in my opinion, a matter of time. It's not an if, it's a when. The EU has regulations, because you love the EU, don't you? They have regulations that say you may not invest in a country that is junk status, which, by the way, Britain won't have to obey anymore. So the fact that Britain just Brexited may be a very good thing for South Africa, because Germany's going to pull all their money out. Sweden's going to pull all their money out. All these countries that fund stuff, and there's tons in health. There's tons in economics. There's tons all over the place in community type stuff. They are piling money in here. And the Netherlands pushes millions into South Africa. All that stuff as investment has to come out the minute we are junk. I'm just tired. The comment was made by Gareth the other day, Cliff. He said, you know, when Jacob Zuma goes, the bar is set so low that the next guy basically just has to count and we'll all be over the frickin' moon. And this is true. We need to get out of this mentality. Stop accepting mediocre or less than excellent people. If they're not excellent or the result of something isn't excellent, don't celebrate it. Don't praise it. And when I raise this on Twitter and I say, stop celebrating the mediocrity, I get told, oh, don't be negative and all this other bullshit esoteric.
Don't be crap. Negative like our credit rating.
Yeah.
Don't be negative like credit rating. But it's a soft bigotry of low expectations, right?
Yeah.
It's about exactly. It's people saying, you know, we didn't expect you to do anything, but we were expected to be junk, but now we're not. So we're going to praise you because we're not sure what you do, Praveen. I know you travel around London and spoke to lots of people.
We've even had people say it on the show. The ANC could have done a lot worse. It's the same soft bigotry of low expectations. Why do we not hold the ANC government up to the same standards we would hold any world government
to? Because apartheid, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Because
apartheid. So same old shit.
Because without being a dick about it, we weren't the only country to have oppression, people. For fuck's sakes. We weren't the only country to have oppression. And a lot of other people who did not have the same... let me just rephrase that. A lot of countries who were backwaters, agrarian societies in the 60s, turned around and are the world superpowers. Singapore, in 1964, was a fucking swamp, right? And whatever his name is, Lee Kin Yew, who was the prime minister for like 40 years, you know what?
Dictator. Complete dictator.
Well, he was voted in numerous times.
Benevolent dictator.
You know what happened? He was sick. You know what he did? He didn't go to America for medicine. He didn't go anywhere. He went to the local hospital and he says, Jesus, this hospital is actually not doing too well. So what I'm going to do is to make everyone else and all the hospitals and give incentives to hospitals to come here and have the best medical care in the world. He didn't roll a Mugabe. He goes to Singapore every 2 years to check his, who knows what, his prostate. No, he says, my people deserve the care that I receive. So I'm going to do it for them.
Yeah.
No, but here we have, thank God we're not junk. Thanks, Praveen, because you didn't vote to remove Zuma, but, you know, you did something. We don't know what, because the ANC doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah.
We don't know what you did. You spoke to some people in Britain, but, yeah, somehow we think that's normal.
Yeah, it's almost, if you give us the worst case scenario, as long as we don't get to that point, we're happy. It's just... unbelievable, and let's stay on the unbelievable side of things. We send firefighters to Canada. Canada has some of the worst wildfires they've had in decades. The fire was something like 6,000 miles across. Just to give you a sense of I might be slightly off on that number, but to give you a sense of that, you could fly from here to Cape Town and back and still not see the end of the fire. That is the sort of size we're talking about. And we send firefighters to help. Our firefighters rock up there and they spend 3 or 4 days. Of course, it's big publicity. You all saw it. Even the Prime Minister of Canada, that left liberal wanker.
Justin Trudeau.
Yeah. He says thank you. And it's a big international thing. And it actually was a huge kudos to South Africa, to our firefighters, to the sort of organization working on fire that sent them. 4 days in, they turn around and go, no, we're not getting paid enough, so we're downing tools. And they start striking literally on the fire line.
Yeah, but if you look at the actual reasons, so they it was sort of labor breaking.
Yeah, I don't agree, though. I'll tell you why. So.
But were they offered, so the salary they were offered at the beginning wasn't the same that they received at the end for work?
I don't know, and I'll tell you why it doesn't matter to me.
Oh, right.
Okay, so I've seen different graphs which say basically what happened was is they went over, there was a salary being paid to them and different people were taking chunks of it as it went down until eventually the bit that they got was like relatively small in comparison to what they would have received if people didn't keep taking their piece. Here's the problem. It's a voluntary mission. those guys volunteered to go on this. I can tell you this from friends of mine who've gone on rescue missions to Japan after the tsunami and earthquake, guys who went to Haiti after the earthquake there. They're rescue missions. You volunteer to go on these missions. They're not about pay. And that's what it is being about, being a paramedic, being a firefighter, being in those industries. It's not about the money. Now, these guys were getting their South African salary. Their South African salary pays them to be firefighters on a daily basis. So if we had a wildfire in Cape Town, for example, they would be on the front lines earning their South African salary, not a cent more. They send them to Canada, still paying them the salary, and they're getting more. I don't care if it was $1 an hour more. That's what they're getting. So the fact that they striked and decided that it was unfair, maybe there were people taking, and maybe that is in essence somewhat unfair, but you were getting a double salary basically. Stop freaking bitching and like be the hero you're meant to be. You're a firefighter for God's sake. Like this is part of the problem. I mean, we see it in nursing as well. Nursing has become a profession where there are still some great nurses, but a lot of nurses do it for the money. And nursing has always been this thing where you do it for the love, the passion, the care for the patient, et cetera, et cetera. It's gone.
Yeah, but that's great from like the 1950s.
But there are the thing is that there are still people like that. I think medicine is the same. It's not to say you can't make money. It's not about that. Because you can do both. You don't have to be a dick in making money. You can do both, but it was unbelievable to me that these guys struck while there, and then they made an international incident.
I thought it was fantastic.
Why?
It was batshit crazy, insane.
Typically South African.
Great trolling. I thought it was great. Like, I don't give a shit either way.
There's the anarchist.
It was great. Anarchist.
All right, let's talk terror. Because we've had some. I'm trying to get a guest on the show, a foreign guest, to come talk to us about terror, but. Before we talk about Orlando, there were actually at the beginning of the month, which is long forgotten, there were terror attacks in Tel Aviv. CNN weren't sure whether they should call it a terror attack or not. They put in the headline was inverted commas terror suspects shot dead. Inverted commas, terror suspects, and then shot dead in Tel Aviv or something. They subsequently apologized. And it's just unbelievable that when something happens in that part of the world, that it's kind of almost an acceptability thing. And then, of course, we get to Orlando. And I can go nuts with what happened and what is still going on around the Orlando shooting.
No, well, let's start at the beginning, though. I mean, Orlando is As a tragedy, I mean, it's absolutely, I was taken aback at how someone could do this. But, I mean, that aside, which is obvious, the amount of backpedaling and the way people are trying to frame this as something that it isn't.
Okay, so within 12
it's
hours.
It's weird.
Let's go through it. So within 12 hours of the attack, we have major senators in the United States, pretty much every left media outlet, which is pretty much everyone except Fox, turning around and saying this happened because of gun control. Now hold on a second. A guy walks into a gay nightclub, which is fundamentally against his religious beliefs, shouts his God's name, phones 911 and tells them he's doing this in his God's name for an Islamic terrorist organization. And we turn around and go, the problem here is gun control. What the actual fuck?
Well, as soon as you know that he got the guns legally, what's gun control got to do with it? He bought those guns legally with background checks. He was on the FBI watch list for years and he still got guns. So tell me about your regulations. That you want to, you know, so, input, and now people are using them and still getting guns.
I don't even think we should get to that, because the point is they're going to go, oh no, well then all, you know, AR-15s, which by the way, he didn't use an AR-15, he used a six.
A six hour, yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't a SAR, but I don't know if that's the second part of the company name or that's the normal handgun that they sell. But anyway, it was a SIG. And so it wasn't an AR-15, which was what the media just ran with. Because, you know, it's America's favorite automatic weapon, which it's also not an automatic weapon.
Let's talk about the AR-15 for a while now. So a journalist for the New York Times, I believe, wanted to go and get one. And he was refused because he has a previous conviction of domestic abuse of his wife. How fucking fantastic is that? Another journalist said he went to the shooting range with the AR-15 and it gave him PTSD. It gave him PTSD. So people are sending in video clips of seven-year-olds. An AR-15 is a, I think it's a 223, right? It's a very, very small caliber.
I've thought it was a slightly bigger, but anyway, carry on.
But anyway, this guy says his ears were ringing and gave him PTSD and the smoke, and he couldn't understand anything because he went to shooting range with the AR-15. But then you have clips of seven-year-olds firing off AR-15s every second day, right? Mm. I mean, what do these people think? What do these people think? I mean, it's not about guns in any way.
Yeah, so the point is they turn around gun control. Let me just explain something to you, is that if you take away the guy's guns and he wants to hurt the people in the gay club, he still will find a way to hurt them. The best you can do is you can argue with me that he wouldn't have killed more than 50 people. He would have only killed 10 or 5 or 1. And if you're going to argue with me that it's better that he just kills 1 than 50, then you're the one who's losing that argument. You cannot argue that it's okay then because we ban guns, so it's okay for one person to die, not 50. It's the same as the Australia argument. So everyone comes after me. Yeah. Australia, Australia banned guns. And then I even turn around and say they banned guns. The Australians get pissed with me. They go, no, we didn't ban guns, whatever. Okay, let me tell you how difficult it is in Australia to get a gun. It's beyond tough. Basically, you have to prove that you need it, either for work or for like hunting or something
like
that.
Like here, though.
Yeah,
I'm in the process of getting one.
So it's worse than here because so you have to be retested repetitively, which you don't have to do here. You have to be part. So, for example, if you're doing it for shooting as a sport, you have to show attendance at a certain number of competitions and things. So they're very strict in Australia. The ban, which isn't a ban, is essentially a ban. It makes it very difficult for the average person to own a weapon. To own a gun. In fact, you can't even own weapons. So you're not allowed to own knives either in Australia, like hunting knives and things. If the cops find you carrying them, they get upset with life and they can actually arrest you for that stuff. So everyone turns around and goes, but Australia. Yes, Australia. Do you want to tell the stats of the shooting? Do you remember?
So the Port MacArthur shooting in 1996.
So they have the Port MacArthur shooting, which is what drives them to say, right, no more guns or very, very strict gun control. That actually doesn't stop mass murder, though. It doesn't do anything to change mass murder. They now have people stabbing each other.
No, but now,
now
you have to look at the trend before and after. If you look at the trend before the Port MacArthur massacre, gun ownership was declining anyway.
Yeah.
That was the first massacre they've had, I think, in 40 years, and they took drastic action after it, and there hasn't been one since. Yes, that's called fucking correlation, right? Not causative. Because Australians are not that violent, unless it's with each other after football games or something, right? Unless they drink. Ooh, I just pissed off the whole of Australia there.
But well, anyway, they do actually beat the shit out of each other.
And then after the Port MacArthur massacre and the regulations around the guns, ownership declined. Fine. Now, they are at the same position in terms of gun ownership now in Australia as they were at the time of the Port MacArthur massacre. So the amount of guns are the same. Just because you have one whacked out weirdo who's on antidepressants who does something, it doesn't mean everyone with a gun does that.
Absolutely. So let's go back to Orlando on the motives. I seriously am so over this hiding away from calling the problem what it is. There is a radical Islam which causes people to do this. And the bottom line is, if you go into these texts, they tell these people who believe in these texts deeply to kill non-believers, to kill homosexuals. This is what the texts say. Stop not believing what these people tell you is their reason for killing people. If someone says to you, I'm killing because my God says what you are doing is wrong and therefore you must die and you are a non-believer and I must dominate the world and I come and I kill you, believe him. Stop making excuses. It's not gun control. He wasn't gay. The FBI have backtracked on all of that kind of stuff. And it looks like he even had help from his wife, at least support, emotional support.
Yeah, and they lost her now. They don't know where she is. But, I mean, I do agree with you. I do think there could be more things than just, you know, radical Islam. 2 months before the massacre, there was a well-known imam from Manchester in Orlando.
Yeah.
It was filmed, and he said, and the question from the audience was, what must be done about gays? He says, no, the Quran says you must kill them. Imagine anyone else said that in public. Anyone. Imagine a rabbi said it. Imagine a Christian, whatever, priest said it. Yeah. Imagine. And, okay, so that happened 2 months before in Orlando. I think it was at the mosque that he was attending, Omar Martin or not. But anyway, so we know very well Islam is not compatible with homosexuality. But then you have President Obama has a press conference just after the massacre. And he says, then he blames people and guns. He refuses to say radical Islam. He refuses to say anything else other than guns.
This is?
Obama.
Oh, no. But he did come out. He did come out in this quite sort of very well-written speech, as always with Obama. You know, great orator. Shitty president. You know, going...
So Hitler was a great orator.
He said... He was. He comes out and he goes, you know, whether I call it radical Islam or not, it doesn't make a difference because...
And that's true.
Because I don't agree with you.
I think that's true.
So here's the thing. If you have a problem, if the brakes on my car don't work and I take it to the mechanic and I know it's the brakes and I don't tell the mechanic it's the brakes... There's something wrong with my car. It's anywhere.
Yeah, but religion...
Just find it.
But consciousness is not mechanical.
No, but so here's the thing is you have to know what you're fighting. And I read a good article. I'll try to remember who it was from, which basically said it does matter that whether he calls it radical Islam or not, because the U.S. policy, you can see it in their foreign policy, in their domestic policy, the way they treat certain things means that they're not flagging radical Islam as an issue. So, for example,
right.
If radical Islam, if they accepted that this is something that causes a danger to our citizens, then the FBI would never have let a guy, questioned a guy and gone, okay, there's no problem. Because if that was a big flag for them, they would have said, okay, Omar Martin is an issue. We carry on following him. He doesn't get a gun, those types of things. Those things might actually have happened. In terms of the foreign stuff, they don't see the ISIS issue as an Islamic issue, and they're losing the fight against it on the ground as a result of that. Putin gets it. I mean, I don't dig the guy, but there are some things Putin seems to understand better than Obama. And ISIS is one of them. You know, it does matter if you identify the problem. And as someone tried to argue with me on Twitter, a friend of mine, Muslim guy, you know, it's the minority, and I don't want to do the not all Muslims thing. Yes, I've fucking course.
No, but it is so obvious. It is so obvious that it's not all Muslims. I mean, come on. It's as ignorant as saying all Muslims are terrorists.
Yeah. But at the same time, guys, it's 1.6 billion people. You can check the Pew Research. It's 1.6 billion people, of which close to 200 million are radicalized people. In other words, they have beliefs. In fact, close to a billion have beliefs that Sharia law should be the law of the world. Okay? Go look up what that means. Go look at what they do to people in countries like Saudi Arabia. It is heinous. So there are a lot of people who, as part of that belief system, have beliefs that are not consistent with Western values. You need to make a decision. You either support Western values or you don't. You can't have it both ways. And that's really my main point on that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, they believe these things, but, you know, to implement them is something else. But going back to the shooter, Omar Martin, he was on a list for a number of years. And his company did not report him. His colleagues did not report him.
Because they were scared of being called Islamophobic.
Now, that is the question. That is the problem we need to fight. That is the thing that needs to be fought. This idea that people self-censor because they're afraid of being called offensive. And what happens if you self-censor? I'm not saying the shooting in Orlando was a manifestation of not being able to report him for, you know, for not for fear of being offended. But it's a very, very big problem when people are unable to say, just look at the facts.
Well,
the guy,
if we go back to the polls point, maybe people aren't even being honest in polls because they feel like maybe they'll be judged for their views. But then when they come to a ballot, they vote differently. They choose differently.
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, it struck me as odd that, well, not odd, I mean, it's part of our times, but that people were scared of reporting him for the fear of being called racist or offensive in any way.
Yeah.
That's when, you know, that's the left's wet dream, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so that's that. But now, running out of time.
Yeah.
Our next podcast, my friends, is with the legendary Gadfather himself. Gad said. So, Gad is an evolutionary psychologist. So he takes Darwinian, Darwinian theory and applies that to consumer choices and the way we, you know, in marketing as well. So we will be on his show on the 29th, I believe.
Yeah, it's well, we're recording on the 29th. You'll only see that on the 5th. Well, I'm not really sure because he may release it sooner.
On YouTube.
On YouTube. The actual Renegade report that you download will probably only be on the 5th. If you do watch it on YouTube, please download the show as well. We still appreciate your download numbers.
Oh, and that's another thing. We 3rd at Cliff Central. And for some reason, the good stuff, which is like all good news stories, number one. What? No, what?
Yeah, look, we love you, Brent, but really.
We're coming for you.
But really, we are
coming for you.
All right, so here's your mission, should you choose to accept it. too corny for you.
Yeah, it's Tom. Yeah, no.
So your mission, every friend of yours who has an iPhone, you're going to open up their podcasts, you're going to search for Renegade Report, and you're going to subscribe. Because we need to get bigger. We very much believe that a lot of the guys that you want us to have on the show, the guys who don't agree with us, who won't come on at the moment, we believe that the bigger we get, the more difficult it will be for them to say no. At the end of the day, they're a bunch of media whores. So the more people who download the show, the bigger we can get. We're hoping the bigger guests we can get, and also the big knobheads we can get, and then give you the show you want to hear.
Yeah, we welcome all knobheads on the show. I mean, there's two already, myself and Jonathan. So what's another three or four? So anyway, that's our solo show for the week. We will see you next week.
Yeah.
Oh, with Gad. Yes, of course.
The next one's Gad.
Yeah.
You can like our Facebook page, please. You can also follow us on Twitter, Renegade_report. Ramon is at Roman Kabanak. I'm at Jonathan_Witt. We love to receive mail, so renegadereportmailbox@gmail.com. Otherwise, obviously, you can tweet us, comment on the Facebook page. I don't know if you can get close enough, you can throw stones. And if you've just finished listening to this, if you enjoyed it, give us 5 stars on iTunes because we deserve it. And that's the end of the show. Cheers.
Cliff Central Revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.